Today on Bread for the Broken with James Grizzle, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Galveston.
I'm not saying you go out and you're like, I want Satan to mess with me. I want Satan to follow. I'm not saying that because we're not crazy. However, I am saying you need to be on mission for God. And when you're on mission for Him, the enemy will be following you. There will always come some sort of trial, some sort of tribulation within your walk with Jesus. You show up, you do a great thing, and then maybe somebody else comes around to totally derail that good work. It happens.
Have you ever gone through a season where it felt as though everything was going pretty well and there was little to no threat from the enemy? While we definitely can use a breather from time to time, no attacks from the enemy might be a sign that we're posing little to no threat. In today's message, Pastor James discusses the importance of regularly being on mission for God. In his study, you'll learn that by being a pillar of light for the kingdom, resistance and attacks are sure to follow. Now here's Pastor James in the book of Acts, chapter 14, with today's edition of Bread for the Broken.
We need bread for the broken. Give some bread to the broken.
So here's the priest of Zeus, whose temple was at the entrance of the city. He brought oxen and garlands to the gates and wanted to offer sacrifice with the crowd. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of it, they tore their garments and rushed out into the crowd, crying out, "Men, why are you doing these things? We also are men of like nature with you. And we bring you good news that you should turn from these vain things to a living, actual God who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and all that is in them. In past generations, he allowed the nations to walk in their own ways, yet he did not leave himself without witness. For he did good by giving you rains from the heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness." Even with these words, they scarcely restrained the people from offering sacrifice to them. So I love their response, right? Paul and Barnabas's response. They rush into the crowd immediately to set things straight. They're like, you're not going to worship us. And they were so disturbed by the fact that these people would even try to worship them that they're physically tearing their own garments. Paul and Barnabas have a great understanding that the only one who deserves to be worshiped, the only one who deserves to be praised is Jesus. At no moment within our lives should we ever welcome the praise of men. We should always be deflecting that onto Jesus, right? And that's a difficult thing. And I could speak as a pastor. It's a hard thing, so to speak, because you may give a message that's great. I don't know, however you define what a great message is. I'm not sure yet. But people are encouraged by it. And they want to say, oh, you know what? Such a good message and all that stuff. That's an awkward position for a pastor, because immediately I know within my heart, I'm like, no. Hey, look, if anything good comes out of me, it's all because of Jesus. And I'm going to tell you, that's an absolute true statement, all right? If God can do anything good out of any of us, all praise goes to Him. Because I don't know about you guys, but I can speak for myself. I'm a mess. I don't even know how God does half of the things He does in and through me. I'm a wreck. And I'm always surprised by the fact that He even chose me. So if anything good comes out a result of this mess, all praise goes to Him. All praise goes to Him. So may that be our heart. May that be our attitudes, okay? And it's not that you can't receive compliments. I'm not saying that, right? I'm not saying that. Nor should you go around thinking, like, if you show up to a church and you hear the pastor give a good message, it doesn't mean that you need to go to him and be like, hey, stay humble, you know, what or whatever, right? Like, maybe he needs to or whatever, but you can compliment for sure. But we all know within our hearts, we need to make sure that we're directing all praise to the Lord. Billy Graham, he used to say, and this is one thing that stuck within my heart and my mind as soon as I got saved, but I read this from Billy Graham. He says, for ministers, for anybody who serves within the church, there are the three G's you have to stay away from. And that's the gold, right? Stay, keep your hands off the gold, right? Don't have, you know, pastors, you know, and I'm not talking about how you do your finances or anything like that. We have other people that handle all our finances here, all the tithes that you guys give. I don't see them. I don't even know. I have no clue. I don't know what you give, if you give. That's not my business, okay? That's between you and the Lord. But we do have people that handle that stuff, okay? So I don't touch the gold. Don't touch the girls. That's another one, right? Because all three of these things that I'm going to name have brought down many strong believers, okay? For sure. Don't touch the girls, right? Stay away from that. Don't fall into that trap. Keep safe distance, accountability, all that good stuff. The last G in that list is the glory. Don't touch the gold. Don't touch the girls. Don't touch the glory. And when we mess up, you know, any one of those three can take anybody out for sure. But the one we don't think that much about, we oftentimes neglect, is the glory. Paul and Barnabas are like, no, you're not going to worship us. No, this is crazy. In fact, let us tell you about the one you should be worshiping, the one true living God, who created the heavens and the earth. And notice, if you're reading through Acts, you know that their message to these Greeks is totally different from their message to the Jews. Paul's going to address, he's going to go back to Genesis, so to speak, but he's going to let these guys know, hey, this one living God that we worship, he created the earth, he created the skies, he created all this stuff. He's created all this stuff. He's made the rain that produced your crops. He has been blessing you from the day you've been born. Any blessings that you have in your life, they're all due to him. They're all due to him. And so they convey this message to this crowd, but it says the end of that section there, even with these words, they scarcely restrained the people from offering a sacrifice to him. They couldn't control these guys. They had lost it. They're going all out. I mean, they're slaughtering bulls probably right there in the street. They're celebrating song and dance and all that good stuff. But it doesn't take long for that celebration to totally stop. And here's where this crowd, this group of Jews that have been following them, they show up. It says, but Jews came from Antioch and Iconium. So these guys have been following them every step of the way. You ever feel like you're being trailed by the enemy every single step of the way in your life and walking with Jesus, right? Let me tell you this. If you don't feel that, then that's where you need to stop and say, okay, Lord, what's not right in my life, okay? Because, listen, nobody wants to be trailed by the enemy, so to speak, but he's only going to follow those who are a threat, okay? So I'm not saying you go out and you're like, I want Satan to mess with me. I want Satan to follow. I'm not saying that because we're not crazy. However, I am saying you need to be on mission for God, and when you're on mission for him, the enemy will be following you. There will always come some sort of trial, some sort of tribulation within your walk with Jesus. You show up, you do a great thing, and then maybe somebody else comes around to totally derail that good work. It happens. It happens. So what do? You just give up. Just give up. Just stop. Yeah. Yeah, just totally cash in and say, all right, Lord, look, this isn't working out. This is hard. So I'm just going to sit on my derriere, and I'm not going to do anything until, you know, you either come and get me or I go to heaven, right? No, that's nonsense. That's nonsense. No, you keep running. You keep running the race. You don't give up. Coronavirus hits. Okay. Kind of stinks for all of us, right? Yeah, it does. Does that mean we stop? No, we don't stop. We don't stop. Is it easy to get discouraged in times like this? Absolutely. Absolutely. Is it easy for doubt to come in and creep in? Because, man, and I think of even just our little church here, we're experiencing so much momentum, and we just started Thursday nights, and some new people were showing up, and all this good stuff, and then out of nowhere, this stupid little bug shows up and turns the world upside down. So do we stop? Do we give up because it's too hard? Not at all. Not at all. Because better days are coming. Better days are coming. Maybe not in this life. The greatest days are coming for all believers. Eternity with Jesus, those days are coming. So we keep running. We just keep running. Just like Paul and Barnabas here, they get chased out of one town. Well, they go to the next town. And they go to the next town. they don't stop going to any one of these towns until God says, okay, this missionary trip is done. Even if the enemy is hot on their heels. So these guys show up. It says that having persuaded the crowds, they stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city. Like, they didn't even drag him out of the city to stone him. They stoned him right then and there. Now, here's where I throw in my dad joke. My kids are watching over. We were talking about, I don't even know what we were talking about yesterday, but we were talking about Queen, the band from maybe the 70s and the 80s, the song We Will Rock You. And I, of course, I'm a dad who has all these awesome dad jokes, started singing that song at our dinner table saying, hey, that totally relates to the chapter I'm going to be teaching out of next week. Now, nobody is stomping and clapping saying, we will rock you to put the Apostle Paul. But these guys grab stones and they begin to chunk these stones at him right there. They stir up the crowd. This crowd in one moment, literally in one moment, is sacrificing animals, trying to worship Paul and Barnabas. And in an instant, they are grabbing rocks and hurling them at the Apostle Paul to kill him. That's how quick it can change. Oh, you're not who we thought you were? You're not Zeus? You're not Hermes? Okay, then we're just going to kill you. What? What kind of reasoning is that? What kind of rationale is that? That's insane. But they were stirred up. They were motivated by outside sources. Just like they would stir up the crowd for Jesus when he was headed to the cross. Release the criminal. Release the known murderer. We'd rather have that guy. Release the criminal. Sacrifice the innocent one. Yeah, what kind of logic is that? That there's no logic within that. None at all. So they drug him out of the city. They thought he was dead. He wasn't dead. He never died. It says, but when the disciples gathered around him, he rose up and entered the city. Are you kidding me? Like, so here's me. If God forbid this ever happens, I don't really see this happening in Galveston, but maybe a crowd stirs up and they begin to throw rocks at me, okay? Let's hope and pray that never happens. You drag me out of, well, we live on an island, so where out of the city can I go? Over the causeway or across the ferry, they drag me around there. And I recover from that. The last place I'm probably going to go is back into Galveston, all right? I'm thinking, like, it doesn't seem like those people want me there. And God, I don't know completely about open and closed doors, but that seems like a closed door. So I'm going to just move on. You know, they can have all my stuff. I'll get my family and we'll get out of here. Paul, as these disciples are gathered around him, probably praying, and it's through their prayers, I mean, he pops up. Just like the lame man at the beginning of the chapter, Paul's going to spring up. And he's like, all right, let's go back. Let's go back. Are you crazy? Are you crazy, right? No, he's doing what he's supposed to do. He's not worried about these guys. He's trusting in the Lord. He's trusting in the Lord. He rose up, entered the city. It says on the next day, he went on with Barnabas to Derbe. So he went back into the city, spent the night there, got some rest. Him and Barnabas packed their bags and moved on to Derbe. It says, when they had preached the gospel to that city and had made many disciples, they returned to Lystra and to Iconium and to Antioch. So they backtracked all the way back through all these cities where they were chased out of. Why? Well, because that's what you're supposed to do. That's how you do church. That's how you do church. You show up, you preach the word. And in this case, you preach the gospel, you make disciples, and then you encourage and strengthen the believers. That's how you're supposed to do church. Now, there are many other things you can do within doing church and communion and worship and praying, and all of that is a part of this. I don't think you can do any of that stuff apart from making disciples and preaching the word and encouraging the saints. That all goes together. But you want to know how to do church. This is how you do church. You preach the word, you make disciples, and you encourage the believers. See, evangelism is a part of that. All of that. It's all encased within those three things. And that's what Paul and Barnabas were doing. They were going city to city, preaching the gospel, making disciples, and encouraging the believers. And then on their way back up through these towns, they're encouraging the believers. And it says here they're gonna set in place some elders, because Paul can't be the pastor of all these churches. That's ridiculous. Okay. This whole, he's not really into satellite churches. Now, there's nothing against that. I know that there's a lot, there's some maybe satellite churches out there now. That's economical for a time period, I think. But if there's well-abled bodies of leaders, well, why not make all those churches autonomous? Raise up leaders. Raise up elders. Ordain them. Set them free. Let them go. Now, if you're part of a satellite church, I'm not bashing on you at all. I understand that that's maybe part of the plan. But I'm looking at Paul's simple plan here. He's like, preaches the gospel, makes disciples, encourages the believers, and then he follows up by appointing other leaders than himself to be the pastors of those churches. It goes on to say that he says he's made many disciples. They returned to Lystra, Iconium, Antioch, strengthening the souls of the disciples, encouraging them to continue in the faith, keep on going, continue in the faith. Hey, all you guys listening and watching online, just keep running with the Lord. And it says that they encourage these believers by saying that through many tribulations, we must enter the kingdom of God. It's all part of it. Tribulations are a part of it. And when they had appointed elders for them in every church that was planted, they appointed elders, well-qualified men to lead the churches. That's what they did in every church. With what? With prayer and fasting, they committed them to the Lord in whom they had believed, or they ordained them, okay? By a show of hands kind of a deal, they're ordaining these men into the leadership of the church. Paul's going around saying, look, I got to go because the Lord's got, he's going to send me on other missions. I can't be the pastor. They didn't have live streaming back then. You know that, right? So it just made sense. Listen, there are well-qualified individuals in each and every one of these towns. Lay hands on them, pray and fast about it first. And when there's that confirmation, lay hands on them and set them free to lead the church. It's also a dangerous thing when we put all of it onto one man. This whole worshiping of men was greatly personified, so to speak, within Paul and Barnabas being labeled as Zeus and Hermes. Had Paul continued on with like, well, no, I'm the pastor of each and every one of these churches, he's essentially falling into the same trap. There are qualified people, believe it or not, there are qualified people all over this globe who the Lord can use to lead churches. Our role as Calvary Galveston is to continually be on the lookout for who those people might be. Because we want to plant other churches. That's always been a part of our goal. We want to plant other churches because there's a lot of places, especially down this Texas coast, a lot of towns could use just faithful, gospel, word preaching kind of churches, and we want to be a part of that. But I will never be the pastor of those churches. That's not my role. That's not my gig. I'm the pastor of Calvary Galveston. But we want to identify people who might be called into the leadership, and we want to set them in place and set them free to pastor, because that's what Paul did. And I think it's a brilliant plan. So it goes on to say, it says they passed through Pisidia, if that's how you say it, and came to Pamphylia. And when they had spoken the word in Perga, they went down to Attalia. And from there, they sailed to Antioch, where they had been commended to the grace of God for the work which they had, or the work that they had fulfilled. It says, and when they arrived and gathered the church together, they declared that all that God had done with them, okay, and how he, God, had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. And they remained no little time with the disciples, or as a New Living Translation says, they stayed there with the believers for a long time. They are going to catch their breath, okay? But this is what's cool about this. So Paul goes out. He's planting churches, he's encouraging the believers, and he comes back to his sending church because every missionary should come back to their sending church and give a report of what God is doing, And every church that supports missionaries should gladly welcome missionaries to come back and give a report of what God is doing. And that's something that we try to do. We want to make all our missionaries feel so special, right? So we have our friend Laura. She's out in Russia, a dear friend of ours from Bible college, actually. 20 years ago. She came, her and Olga came this last January. They came the year before that. When they show up, we want them to feel loved and appreciated for all that God is doing in and through them. And we're going to give them a platform. We're going to give them a whole Sunday morning to testify, just like Paul and Barnabas got to do here at this church. They're going to testify of what God is doing. So any other missionaries that we have and that we bring on that we're going to be supporting, because we're not stopping any of that support. We're not stopping any of that support. Any money that comes in, we are still supporting missionaries, and we're looking to support more. But we will gladly welcome missionaries that we support, and I will gladly hand over the pulpit to those guys and say, you tell us what God is doing in and through you and all the great things that he's done with through your ministry. We need that. The body needs that. Missionaries need that. It's a difficult thing to go out on mission for God, especially if you're going to go out planting churches or starting orphanages or even just creating an insane Bible, online Bible ministry like the Bible Project that is reaching millions upon millions of individuals. It's difficult things to do. You're going to encounter. Remember, Paul and Barnabas, the enemy was always hot on the trail. It's the same for all our missionaries out there as well. Okay, so we want to encourage them. But this is how you do church. This is how you walk with the Lord Jesus. If you could summarize this chapter, you just keep going. A difficulty comes in your life. Listen, nobody likes that. And if you have prayer requests, you need prayer for anything, by all means, let us know. We want to pray for you. We want to be there to encourage you and to help strengthen you in your walk in pursuit of Jesus. We absolutely want to be there for you. But it's to be expected. If you're thinking like, man, I gave my life to the Lord and it's been nothing but difficulty and hardship, maybe I did something wrong. No, let me tell you, you've done everything right. You've done everything right. And it seems counterintuitive, but it actually is what you should expect. Because the enemy is going to go after anyone who is a threat to him. So any trials, tribulations that you face within your life, you really can, just like you ladies are going through the book of James, you can really kind of rejoice in these things because God is going to use those to strengthen you. So you don't give up. You don't quit. You keep on running. You keep on preaching the gospel. You keep on sharing the good news. You keep on telling people and testifying of how good Jesus is. And you keep your eyes on him. You keep on running. You don't stop. We don't get to stop, guys. We don't get to stop. We keep running. We keep running. The finish line, I believe, is closer than it ever has been. It's closer than it ever has been. In fact, I don't know. I don't know if you guys are sensing the same thing. And I could be off. And if I'm off, then I'm off. But nobody knows the date. Nobody knows the time. Nobody knows any of that stuff. But it appears to me that the light at the end of the tunnel seems to be getting bigger. It's almost like you can see that tape at the end of that finish line. And it's getting closer. And if you've ever run any kind of races, you understand that it's when you get a glimpse of that, there's sometimes this adrenaline boost that happens within your body, the second burst, where it's like, all right, there's the finish line. I'm going to run hard. I'm going to keep going. That's my encouragement for all of us. As we walk through the book of Acts, we see this with the Apostle Paul. Keep your eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, and you keep running. Keep running. It's always too soon to give up. It is always too soon to quit. Always.
Hope for the hopeless, hopeless, pray for the broken.
That's all we have time for today at Bread for the Broken, but we're so glad that you joined us as Pastor James continues through the book of Acts. This book is a powerful representation of how the church first began. It contains a variety of snapshots into effective ways of sharing the gospel. Some apostles shared in large groups, while others taught in more intimate settings. Some taught the gospel through words, and others shared through signs and wonders. Do you wrestle with sharing who Jesus is? Be encouraged. As long as you're teaching the hope and truth of Jesus, there is no wrong way. If you'd like prayer in this area, we would love to pray for you. Visit breadforthebroken.com, click on the contact tab, and let us know how we can be praying. If you'd like to listen to more teachings like this, you can find them too when you visit breadforthebroken.com. Just click on the teachings tab. You'll also be able to learn more about Calvary Galveston at our website, as well as find directions to our location. Calvary Galveston is a church of ordinary people seeking to live as Jesus did. We meet every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. So if you're ever in the Galveston area, we would love to meet you. Our atmosphere is relaxed, so just come as you are. You can find out more and get directions on our website. Again, that's breadforthebroken.com. Thanks for listening to Pastor James's teaching today. Know that we're praying for you, and we hope you'll join us to continue digging into the book of Acts next time on Bread for the Broken.
Let me paint the picture of you.